Warning: Some listeners may find the contents of this show disturbing. Parental discretion is advised.
You know, obviously, you're also involved in other things. You don't just do the you know, in inverted presence, the crush video. Mm-hmm. But you still obviously think that single issue campaigns are worthwhile.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, Anthony had started a campaign of stop buying into extinction, right, Anthony? Am I saying that correct?
The biggest, for Aiella, that's going to be the biggest ongoing campaign, is the Stop Buying Extinction campaign. And in basic, we're going to be educating people on the effects of factory farming on all aspects of life, the planet, humans, animals, everything. And
that again sounds like a major task. I mean, we're all doing this in our own ways, in a way that, you know, I, for instance, you know, everywhere I go, I quote the United Nations for change, because they were even saying that 52% of all the greenhouse gases are direct from cattle farming.
Well, actually, what people don't know is that methane is about a 50 times more powerful greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide. And we're just not taking that into account. And I don't know why people don't understand the correlation, because if you just use common sense, when you take a machine like a car and you put fuel in it and you burn the fuel and you expel the gas, you create greenhouse gases. Now, a human body or a cow's body is a machine, and you put fuel in it and it expels the gases, which create greenhouse gases. It just correlates and makes sense.
Yeah.
Without getting into technical details, it's still a problem, and people should realize that. And when you have one-third the number of cows as you do human beings on this planet, and a cow consumes about 50 times what a human will consume, you're going to have a problem.
Yeah. But also, like, you know, obviously there is this addiction to meat.
Yeah, we all call it a flesh addiction. In the animal rights world, it is just considered the flesh addiction. So.
Yeah.
And that's what it is. It's the truth.
Yeah.
So we have to look at it as it is, and it's very difficult to make people see it that way, and we all do our best in our own way.
Exactly. And then, you know, the other thing is that obviously, you know, everybody goes easy if it is an addiction. And people say, I can't control myself. I mean, you know, I'm a chocolate addict. You know. So I think really the time has really come, you know, as Steve Best always says, negotiation is over. Where the compassion really goes to where it's due, and that would be the animals.
Well, I think anything that doesn't have the ability to voice its plight, we do have to speak up for.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we're not just factory farming we're factory farming the whole planet. We're going now into our marine life because we're overfishing now, because we're pretty much destroying all the arid land that we can get our hands on.
That's true, and then also, like, you know, when you see films like The Cove or The End of the Line, you know, that deal with The Cove is more about the dolphin killing in Tai Chi, but the film like The End of the Line, which obviously is more about overfishing, then you have companies like Mitsubishi, and they actually freeze quick freeze some of the fish. In case they go extinct, they can you know ask or triple the prices, and here you are in the Western world thinking they're building cars.
That's right. Yeah, I was reading about that the other day too.
It's a frightening thought.
It is. I mean, I had the chance to talk to the one of the producers, and watch the movie here in Dublin, and they were all down there. It was good crack and good to see that. But it's really shocking. You know, when you see sort of Mitsubishi being involved in these things, and people who speak up are sometimes even sort of in danger. You know, one of the guys that spoke up about it, he was one of those.
The more that we learn, it's hard to get surprised.
That's true. It's hard. You know, maybe it is hardly surprising, but it's still shocking. You know, because part of you still wants to believe that we're not in trouble.
Oh, yeah, we run into that all the time. I mean, so many people write to us and say that global warming doesn't even exist. I mean, we run into this constantly.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure you hear it all the time. Most life advocates, we run into this constantly.
Well, you know, we even have people that say the Holocaust wasn't true.
Yeah, we actually have friends who are very upset about that.
Yeah, I can understand it.
And I could totally understand why. I mean, I was actually blessed to meet a woman named Kobe Siegenthaler out in California. Marla, you met her too.
Yes,
incredible woman, Dutch woman. Her family actually hid Jews during the Nazi occupation, and she had newspaper clippings from that time. I mean,
wow, that's historical.
The photos that I saw, I had never seen growing up in high school, you know, with what we learn in school. I mean, it was just horrific. It was unrealistic.
I went down, one of the things that I did when I started working for a community radio station, I went down to do footage on the Anne Frank exhibition, and I met a gentleman called Thomas Reichenthal, who lives in Dublin for the last 46 years, and he was in Bergen-Belsen. And they thought they'd make a point of sending me down there as being the German fella.
Right.
And to do some footage there. And it was really interesting, you know, so over time, how you have your enemies sorted. I remember him saying to me that we are all perpetrators. You know, and the next time this is happening, it may not be the Germans that do that. You know, so we were just talking about this, this whole thing, and there are still people out there that think, you know, that's just an event that we created to, I don't know, get the papers busy.
Well, I think you make a good point, and basically what you're saying is that when people are being oppressed, others cannot be silent. We have to stand up. We have to take action. Yeah. And it's the same thing with the animal rights movement and any other movement.
Well, you have really loads of people in the animal rights movement, you know, when there is obviously these slogans that says that there is a Holocaust for animals every day, and you still have a lot of people that don't like it, because again they think that you are actually saying, you know, the Jews are like animals, which is completely missing the point. But this is how people see it, because there's this distinction between animals and humans.
It's a selective compassion.
Yeah.
And you'll see that governments also do it when they want to start a war with another country. They immediately build, and people call it propaganda, and it is propaganda, but they start with selective compassion.
Yeah.
Most people care about their animals, but they won't care about anybody else's animals. And again, it comes down to universal compassion. We have to break down those sorts of stereotypes. Selective compassion is just one of the hardest things to try and break through to people. I've seen people that have abused other animals and yet would never touch their own animals.
Yeah, and if they would know that you do it, they would persecute you, because they sometimes not. The other thing is, there's obviously the psyche is completely different. You know, when someone does that to get a kick, he might not even, obviously he doesn't feel the guilt.
Yeah, it's strange. I mean, and we do it to ourselves. We do it against other humans as well. So it only stands to reason that we're going to do it against other species.
Absolutely.
Which is what and that's one of the biggest hurdles, I think, too. Most people that aren't involved in animal advocation, they just see us sort of as these kind of extreme group. I mean, even within our own families, you know, I mean, you'll find that not every member of the family is an animal advocate. So you're kind of isolated even there.
Yeah, that's
And
true.
You're isolated at school, too. You're isolated when you go to the cafeteria. There's no vegetarian food.
Yeah.
There's no vegan food for these poor kids. And so, again, it's a selective compassion that is just getting inbred. And it's part of the problem that we're dealing with. It's a huge problem.
It is. Because people would basically, you know... And the other thing is, obviously, it's easier to say, well, you know, she was always a bit odd, wasn't she? Then to say, you know, hang on a second, what is she actually about? Maybe she has a point there. It sometimes gets to that stage, because obviously one of the things that the reason why it feels so good to meet and to talk and to spend time with other activists is because you're not being judged.
Well, that's true, and it's also an easy way for people to use their apathy. You know, and an easy excuse to say, well, I don't want to listen to that person, they're crazy anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's so that correlates back to what you just said. And the truth of the matter is, there is selective compassion within the movement as well.
That's,
I mean,
yeah.
You can't have, if you're an animal activist, you also need to have compassion for the human animal as well. And that's just my opinion. That's my opinion as well. And I think that part of that is completely necessary for them to reach other human beings. You have to be able to communicate properly with a human being before you're going to be able to reach them on an intellectual level.
Yeah, that's true.
And if you can't have some form of compassion for another person, and all your compassion is donated completely to animals and not humans, just the animals, you're going to have a hard time associating. And that's just my opinion. I mean,
it makes sense, but I can understand the frustration that activists feel. Yes. Being one myself, and not everybody is probably as well versed as you would be, you know.
Well, just as you guys have brought up many times, I am pretty much alone. I don't really know many other vegans, and when I do run into them, it's like, oh wow, you know.
Yeah, same here.
We are on our own, and we do speak and do what we do. By ourselves and very separate. I mean, Marla's in California and I'm in Florida. We're thousands of miles away from one another. And the other advocates that are in our group, where is Skylar? She's in Portland, Oregon. Is that where she is?
Yeah, she's exactly? in Oregon.
And Irish and Sheila are up in the Northeast. And we do our work and we need one another, but we're so separated. And it goes, I think that goes with a lot of groups when it comes to animal rights. We're very secluded from one another.
And the whole thing of being isolated also means that the meeting of the mind is so much more difficult.
Yes.
You know. Agreed.
Yeah.
I mean, I have that, you know, when we decided that we were going, leaving Ireland after 10 years, you know, and I really love the place, I love the Irish, you know, but I still think it's about time to do something else. One of the few vegan friends that I have says, oh, I see you at a Christmas fair in London because they have a vegan Christmas fair. You know, this is something probably that's going to happen here in 20 years. And so like, wow, it's about time to move.
Yeah.
Well, you know, even obviously you don't move to a country because they have a vegan fair, but just the thought that it could be that bit easier to walk, or you to live your life being a vegan, because it's not being vegan isn't difficult. Is being judged is difficult, and being sort of in this environment where veganism is just not supported, obviously.
And you don't really get invited to a lot of holiday dinners, you know.
No, but then the other thing is that obviously I wouldn't go, because for quite a while I would sit with the people. You know, that goes back to being compassionate towards humans. For a while I would sit with them and they would eat their chicken and I would eat my stuff, you know, and I just thought like, well, you know, they're not there yet, but I'm actually at the point at the moment where I just say like, you know, why would I sit there?
Yeah,
you know?
it does get disturbing after a while.
Yeah.
The longer
when
you,
especially when they're your friends, you know.
I do agree with that.
That's why I think a lot of us kind of stick together, because, you know, it's always a relief when you do run into another vegan and you're not seen as the odd one in the group.
Yeah, it's funny. But I think also on a deeper level, you know, you were talking about family there, Marla. I think on a deeper level, because there's this bond of love, you're bound. There will be someone in the future that is just turning out the way you turned out.
Yeah, and you know, my mom is a very compassionate woman, and we always had animals around us growing up. And I think just by the way she acted with other animals and interacted, and she was always going, you know, talking to us as children about the human, not the human nature, but the emotions of the animals as well.
Mm.
Like, don't run into the room too fast, you might scare her, things like that, you know, with our cat and whatnot. That made us aware, you know? And I think if more parents can do that with their children, the children can be more aware that they're dealing with a sentient being.
Absolutely.
It's not a play toy.
Exactly.
You know?
And that's I think is the bottom line, really, because oftentimes, you know, when I work with families or with children, you know, you usually give out to the child for pulling the dog's tail and not the other way around.
Right.
You know, it often when people say, oh, I don't know, you know, about the dog, you know, I would be more concerned about your child messing it up.
Yeah. My mother's compassion is for all creatures, you know, whether it's human or animal. She's just always been that way, and I think that helps.
Yeah, definitely.
So I was very fortunate in that sense, you know, but I see a lot of kids where I live, and I don't live in a good area. I live kind of, well, I live in a gang-banging kind of area. Mm. But I see a lot of kids treating animals the way that they're being treated by their parents.
Absolutely. That's exactly what happens, you know. It's obviously you see that, you know, very often when people are in a domestic violence situation, logic would usually say, well, you know, I never do that to someone else, and they all end up doing it themselves.
Yeah.
You know, it sort of is handed down shit, as I call it.
Yeah, it's psycholeptic, and it's something that needs to stop. And I think more awareness should be raised in schools as well.
Oh yeah, I mean, school is the one place. You know, this is one of the institutions that is as well, like, as parents and stuff, forming your children.
Yes.
You know, definitely, and that's a problem too, because even as we look at the information that's being released, I think you and I, we talked about the intergovernmental panel on climate change when we were speaking about global warming, and even they, if you look at their findings, which are frightening. Okay, to begin with, but they're only based on CO2. They say nothing about the methane emissions.
Yeah,
because I think in general they don't want to scare people.
Yeah, and, I mean, I wouldn't, you know, I mean, the things that you know, when you have this, what's it called? There's this Freedom to Know Act or whatever, where people
right.
that go and view old papers and stuff, and they're still 70% crossed out.
Right.
You know.
Yes.
So, yes. So much for, oh yeah, I finally got my hands on this piece of paper. Found the truth. It's all crossed out, you know?
Well, yeah.
Yeah, the Freedom of Information Act.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. It's really, really strange. And that's, I think, you know, it's a thing that obviously, because everything is so multi-layered, you know, I said it before that obviously, doing radio, obviously, I have to do really single campaigns. Otherwise, you know, people do not listen. You know, I have to try sort of say, well, you know, let's talk about Stop Crush videos and these things, even though it's all in interlinked. But and lots of people don't like single issue campaigns because I think it's isolated and it becomes, you know, I mean, I know animal rights activists that hate other animal rights activists because they only spend time trying to save the elephants.
Yeah,
they
kind of see it as speciesism, and
yeah.
with our campaigns, it's more of a global campaign. Each campaign that we have is separate, but it all falls under the same umbrella. Yeah.
And even if you would, you know, the other thing about this is obviously when people say, oh, they only spend time to do the Stop Crush videos or to do elephants, it might take this person a lifetime or two to get that sorted because
right.
the problems are so deep, you know?
Yeah.
Well, look at the problems we're dealing with when it comes to Crush video alone.
Yeah,
we've spoken about some of it here when it just comes to teaching compassion for life in general from the start. But I think what we have to realize is a lot of these issues they correlate, they connect. You have to, you know, when you talk about abusing dogs, or when you talk about any issue associated with animal rights or abusing circus animals, you're talking about compassion, teaching compassion from a young age to begin with.
Yeah.
So they do interconnect. So you really can't talk about one without it kind of flowing into the other.
Yeah.
But at the same time, when we do a campaign like StopCrush.org, which is based on Crush video, it's based on the depiction of cruelty. While we're running that campaign, we have to really try to focus on that. But we have several other campaigns that we're working on as well. I mean, we're not lying when we say sometimes we don't get sleep. So
I absolutely believe it.
And I'm sure you understand.
Yeah.
Yeah,
sort of. No, but I mean, that's the thing, you know, obviously being in a minority, it always means, you know, when people say like, oh yeah, you know, you just put your back on your shoulder, we're entitled to it because we usually do more work.
Yeah, because we also, a lot of us are holding down other jobs, and you also have the everyday, you know, family issues,
yeah,
things like that. For people that are married and have children as well, and they're working full time, and they're campaigning and they're advocating on top of that. I mean, there's not been one time in our group meetings in Stop Crush when we've all had a decent night's sleep. Not once.
Yeah.
You know, somebody is usually, you know, falling madly asleep, and it's just...
Which doesn't mean it's boring.
No, it just means nobody's getting any rest. And it's, because you have the everyday pressures as well. And in a way, too, they also like to talk about when you meet other people that are vegans. Today I called up Anthony and I was talking to him about something that had happened in the break room where I work. I mean, most people know that I'm a vegan, so you kind of feel, they don't try to make you feel isolated or anything like that. I mean, people are very nice when I go in there and whatnot, and they always say to me, oh, do you want some of this or something? But they all know that I'm a vegan, so I notice that they try to hide their food sometimes when I go in there.
Yeah, you have that, you know. I mean, I remember two years ago, the Dublin County Council sent me to different libraries to give talks to children.
Yes,
and and because of my radio work, obviously they would know that I'm vegan. And when you went to the canteen, they would all hide their little chicken under the table and stuff. You know, I mean, you could smell the mile away.
Right.
How silly is that? You know, or they would say like, oh my God, you know, they would blush for a second and say, oh my God, now you know you caught me there.
Yeah, and you know what I tried to get across to a lot of my friends was that. I'm not judging them. I don't want them to feel like they have to hide something.
Exactly. You're not phobic in a way, like, you know.
Right. And I said, well, one girl did approach me and she was like, well, why does it offend you exactly? And I said, well, okay, for example, you got this at a fast food restaurant. I'm going to show you a film if you want to see it. It's just a short video on YouTube of where your food came from, if you want to see it. I said, I'm not trying to push my beliefs on you, but I think you should see at least where it's coming from.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't even know that they're actually grinding up baby chickens.
Oh yeah,
chicks alive.
Yeah.
And it just kind of floored a lot of my coworkers when they saw this, and some of them just stopped eating eggs, and it's a start.
Absolutely, everything is a start. Absolutely, you know. I mean, sometimes you know these so-called this compassion wears off because obviously meat is quite cheap.
And it's not that these people, it's not like my friends or some of my coworkers are callous people. It's not like that at all. They're very compassionate people. They just don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, like you were saying before, it's the awareness of trying to get it out there. And so many people don't want to know. They don't, you know, they'll see like 2 seconds of Earthling and say, oh, I can't look at this.
Yeah.
And it is hard. There's no doubt about it. I mean, we keep each other going in the group by constant pep talks. And I think a lot of advocates do that.
And you know, a lot of people get activist fatigue. You know, that's all part of it. I think, you know, and we have every right to sometimes say like, you know what, I have a day off, even though when you know that the animals don't get a day off.
No, they don't. But in those people's defense, the people that can't handle it and they don't want to see and they run away. In their defense, I saw, you know, parts of Earthlings, and when I saw those chicks in the dumpster dying. I mean, I ran away from it, but at the same time, I already know that these things are happening. I cried my eyes out when I saw that.
Yeah, and even if you have a breakdown,
I'm a bird lover, so I love birds.
Exactly, but even when you break down, but you know, at least you say, well, you know, but I continue fighting.
Yes.
Well, yeah, you have to.
Unfortunately,
you're right about that. You're right about activist fatigue. You are definitely right about that. It's something that we run into a lot. All activists do, and. You get to the point where you see so much brutality that you just you have to take a break.
And I think, you know, one really has to acknowledge it, because when some people, you know, I had that on Facebook, you know, when people sent me stuff, I said, look, not today, I'm not signing anything today.
Yes.
You know, like, what happened to you? I'm just not signing anything today. I'm not opening one link.
you were talking about today. I was experiencing some of that, and so was Anthony earlier in the week, and I couldn't get on Facebook and look at one more picture for a while. I really need to recover. And so, yeah, I definitely agree with you when you talk about that. And I wish somebody would write a book about that, actually, because I think more people need to know about it.
Maybe someone will one day, you know?
Well, I found that the best thing that helps me is that I'll just sit on the beach for a few hours. I'll take a day and I'll just sit and watch the ocean, and
it goes back to being connected to nature.
Yeah, I agree.
If you have the luxury.
Yes.
Of you know, going to places. I mean, I'm living rural now, but I'm going to move to a place that is a bit more like the city I'm from. So it's a bit more people and stuff, you know. So I have to build a new haven there for me, which is going to happen.
That's hard. That's difficult in that area. It is.
Yeah.
Yeah, where you are, it's going to be very difficult, I think. But you seem to be very balanced, you know. And I think, I've been on your website, and you have a lot of really good information that it makes people aware, but it certainly does not judge people and doesn't, you know, send people away.
I usually try to sort of, you know, have a, even in sort of bad times, you know, I always try to have a little bit of humor in as well.
Yeah, I noticed that. I love that.
So there's a little bit of joke here and there, like, you know, I mean, they're all animal-related jokes, but they're still good, you know.
Yeah, you have a
wonderful
website.
Definitely helps.
Yeah. So anyway, guys, I have to let you go now, because I have to also edit that stuff tomorrow.
Yeah. Well, it's been
fantastic. I really appreciate
this.
No, you're very
thank
welcome.
You so
I'm actually glad that, you know, at least I know it has recorded now. So before I let you go, for the people that, you know, say, okay, you know, I heard it all, but where exactly is the page? Just give out your website again.
It's www.stopcrush.org. We have all the information you're going to need to help us ban these videos, not only in America, but overseas as well.
Perfect.
And we really appreciate your time and interviewing us. And you're a lovely person to talk to. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. Likewise. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Thomas, for the opportunity.
Wild Time.